on an optimistic side, I believe we need growth. And what we saw like the last 15 years, that there wasn't growth anywhere. It's just rates going down. And this is the place. I would say that this is one of the few places that we can, as an investor, see growth.
It's a totally different ballgame to make investments in a honeymoon land. Once you start to manage these single companies, when things go unexpected, you are not as optimistic as you used to be. You start to argue about things, about money, growth, and strategy. Then the experience, because experience is a hard teacher. She gives you the lesson first.
Hey, hey, folks. This week, I am planning my return to Europe for the summer. And so whether you're a GP, LP, or even a founder, I thought we'd all benefit from this very conversation I had last summer with some European LP veterans of industry. I respect Mark O'Hara, formerly the director of ELO, one of the largest employee pensions in Finland, and Tommy Villa, currently head of investments at OP Financial Group with some 14.2 billion euros assets under management. This was clipped from the LP Summit, my firm Beyond the Billion, co-hosted in Helsinki in 2023 with Arctic 15, led by my friend Jan Amri. I share quite a bit about the context of this conversation in my intro, so let's jump right in. Welcome to Billion Dollar Moves. I'm Sergeant Spellings, and on the show, I travel across the globe in search of the unexpected leader. Every week, it is my job to deconstruct the billion dollar moves of unicorn founders and funders, many of them underestimated long before they became iconic. Many of them unexpected leaders just like you. This show is about unfiltered conversations on success, failure, fear, and courage in the pursuit of the next big thing in tech and venture. Now, before we hop in here, I have a quick favor to ask you. About 80% of the listeners of this podcast have yet to hit the follow button, and it would really help me out if you would smash that follow button wherever you're tuning in from. The bigger the show gets, the bigger the guests get, and the more stories we can amplify across the global venture ecosystem so that we can all keep making billion dollar moves together. Now, let's get started. What a great start. Hi, gentlemen. What a great start. A lot of discussion. And I loved how we're starting with the future is indeed, by definition, different from the past. And today we will be talking about deployment. Now that we've had a little bit of the macro, we'll comment a little bit about that. But to really weigh in on what do we do now with current market conditions, we just went through this COVID period. We went through a technology asset bubble where the prices were all-time high through 21, 22. And now it's a huge market correction where, as we're thinking about building up, especially in Europe in the last decade, building up a private equity allocation with this correction, what does this mean moving forward? How do we think about really delivering the returns that, as very clearly said by Lisa and Joe early on, that, you know, it is time to really be focused and deliver returns as you promise and be disciplined. How do we bring that to the table? So with me, of course, is a very experienced panel. Tommy, Chief Investment Officer at OP Financial Group, Insurance Investments, and Mark O'Hara, currently an independent advisor, but almost for the last decade has served as director at ELO and led a team that managed a portfolio of something like 50 private equity and venture capital investments and 20 investments in unlisted companies. Yeah. So a lot to pull in from, but let's get started here. Maybe Mark, if you can sort of set the scene, commenting on what was said earlier. What do we think about the current market conditions and how should we be reacting to what next year?
Maybe a few words about myself. I guess I'm one of the older guys in the room. I started 1986. And that was 1 year before the Black Monday. And I was an options and futures trader, which was not the best place to be. During the 1990s, I was a co-founder and founder of four different companies during the great financial crisis in Finland. And we survived that. 1999, I started as a family office investor and a GP investing in technology companies. There was 1-2 years before the tech bubble. And we survived even that, even though it took something like 5 years. 2007, I started as the head of private equity in a pension plan, which was 1 year before the great financial crisis.
Wow.
So my timing has always been perfect, so to speak. And we survived even that. And it took about 4 or 5 years to normalize the situation. And then came the euro crisis. And then we have the 2019 COVID, which was a short-term crisis. And then we have the surge, which means that the great bull market continued. And now we are here. So that's the background for myself. But when it comes to the question, I would say that experience matters. And what we are looking at here is something that had happened already in the past several times. It's not the same thing, but it's about the same things.
So let's dive a little bit deeper. Because we have the benefit of you being through the many different cycles, how would you advise LPs in the room to be thinking about this current cycle? I was just reading Washington Wall Street Journal earlier, and you know, venture fund returns have had the worst slump in this decade.
Basically, you have to keep calm. There is not much you can do about it when it comes to your portfolio, unless you want to sell parts of it, which means that you have to give a great discount, which I would not recommend anybody to do if you don't have to. So basically, you just have to ride over the cycle.
Tommy, maybe you can be helpful here in your view and maybe share a little bit of your vantage point as well, your experience from insurance.
Yeah, so great to meet you guys. My name is Tommy Beer. I work for the OP Finance Group. I've been chief investment officer for maybe a bit over 20 years now. How we look at it is, of course, like a holistic view on a portfolio level. So looking at the old asset classes. And of course, it helps when you have the experience on of different cycles. And I think every cycle is different. But I would say this time, what we saw and have been seeing is, of course, that last year we saw the real rates rise and stock and bonds going down. But in like alternatives and illiquid side, in a bigger level, not so much change. So actually, when you look at the diversified portfolio, you haven't really seen the assets coming down. I agree that maybe venture capital or big funds have seen some price depreciations, but in a like all portfolio level, you haven't seen it yet. And as Joe mentioned that earlier, that there's a sale, I would disagree in that sense that maybe, and this is the big question, is this like 2009 or 2007, and we haven't still seen the biggest drawdown yet. And of course, this is everybody's waiting for the recession, and it's coming there on the stairs, and everybody's watching it, but it hasn't yet come.
Yeah. So, Tommy, if I may, you're assuming a very well-diversified portfolio allocation, and maybe this is a segue into that. You know, I guess from an institutional side, how are the allocations for the benefit of people in the room here? Is venture capital really just a blip in the radar, so it doesn't matter? How is your thinking shifting now that public equity is being affected tremendously?
Yeah, well, of course, when the house is burning, you have a concentrated on the biggest European venture capital in a bigger sense is playing a very small level or small share in your portfolio. If you agree that on that, and then of course there isn't much what you can do. Of course you have to be patient, but every institutions have their own investment plans for private equity or venture capital, and there we are going to commit this amount of capital and this amount of new managers. What happened last year was really big change. And in that sense, might come some restrictions. Like, you know, hey, let's have a pause here. And this is the dilemma for many institutions that, okay, there are now opportunities. If we commit now, the capital will go there, committed in like two to three years. And this is really the best time to go, or at least keep on investing. But then again, there's might be a bigger problems if you haven't built your portfolio like for the long term.
So Marco, I mean, we were looking at some data together here. Can you share a little bit about, you know, how you're seeing the split between institutional allocations from the profile of endowments, foundations, insurances compared to family offices? How is the weighting into private equity, and is this going to change now moving forward?
Well, I would say that traditionally private equity or venture capital investments, the endowments, family offices, high net worth individuals have always had higher allocation on venture capital, direct and funds. Last data I was looking at was in general high net worth or the ultra high net worth individuals and in family offices, they had about 20 to 25% allocation in private equity and venture capital, direct and indirects. And they had about 45% in alternatives. That's what they had, which means that a great part of that private allocation was in venture capital and growth. About 60%, maybe 65%. When it comes to institutions like us, the last time I look at the figures in the last company I was working for, we had about private equity and venture capital funds for 6 billion euro. That was the net asset value for the portfolio. And the venture capital allocation in funds was just few percent. That's how it was. And there are several reasons for that. Because for 5, 10, 15 years ago, if you wanted to invest in the US venture capital funds, you didn't have the access to these funds. It was difficult to get in because they had the homeboys there, the local investors who've been supporting these companies for the past 20 years. So there was no access. So what we did at Elo, we invested in domestic venture capital funds. As you did. You did the same thing. And I think we invested in about 25 different funds in Finland, including some of these funds, which were micro funds, which means that the assets under management for single funds were less than 20 million, which is a really small fund for us to invest. When we followed our rules not to have more than 10% in a single fund, it meant that we could invest only between 1 to 2 million in one micro fund in Finland. And the largest funds in Finland in venture cap were about 150 maybe. There were a couple of funds, and that meant that we could invest up to 15 million, which we did. On the other hand, it means that we had to invest in 25 funds to get a portfolio which was maybe under 200 million out of 6 billion. Because we didn't invest in bigger funds abroad, we didn't have access to these funds in the past, and now we would, or my former company would have it. So that's a dilemma for a big institutional investors, because you don't want to have a portfolio where you have several hundreds of different funds. Last time I looked at it, for about 6 months ago, we had about NAV was 6 billion. We had a commitment for a few billion, and the amount of funds we had there was a little bit over 200. And it's a nightmare to manage a portfolio over 200 funds. It's a nightmare.
Yeah. And Marco, I mean, you know, part of this is also pretty interesting. You talked about the challenges, right? Historically, a lot of LPs in Europe have not had that access to what were either name brand funds or top tier funds in the US and beyond. And so you focus domestically. But now with market conditions, good news for those who have the capital in hand. But do you think this will shift now that there is more demand? The fundraising winter is here in many ways, right? For those who are what are the have-nots. Do you think this will be an opportunity for access to open, and are European LPs going to be taking this opportunity?
I'm totally sure about that. We have already seen it.
Yeah.
You have access to some of the top tier funds, which were totally impossible for us for 15 years ago, 10 years ago, maybe 5 years ago. Now there is an access not only for the institutional investors, but also for the, I would say, the high network or ultra high networks, and also family offices.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I remember, I think it was like 5, 6, 7 years ago, there was this initiative at OP to build up something new, venture, and what could this like fintech future could be for banks. And I participated in this round also in Silicon Valley and meet the manager. We are managing 10 billion euros, mm-hmm. and total assets with the asset management is roughly a bit under 100 billion. So, but in relative terms, we are a small investor for US. And I met a lot of VCs, GPs in Silicon Valley, and I felt that, okay, you can get in a line and maybe wait for like 5 to 10 years and maybe then get in, or it would have required a lot of work. And of course, the reach would have been very difficult to get right. any allocation. But I would say maybe this time it's different. But then again, I would say that the markets should be viewed as a holistic view. So as Lisa said, you can get a 5% yield on dollars in treasuries, or even the reverse repo in the central bank, Fed, and provide you that. And that sets the limit for everything. And I would say, when you think about the new real rate environment. The markets haven't settled yet the new normal. So maybe in some asset classes we have seen that, but it will take time to face the reality for the new rate environment.
Right. So the new rate environment, the market correction is going to take some time. But I guess with the LPs in the room, you know, part of this discussion here is how do we think tactically moving forward? Is it a wait and see? I mean, both of you have said there's not much you can do. But what would you say to your younger LPs who are thinking about portfolio construction and how to actually make this work in a time that is uncertain?
On an optimistic side, I believe we need growth. And what we saw like the last 15 years, that there wasn't growth anywhere. It's just rates going down. And this is the place. I would say that this is one of the few places that we can, as an investor, see growth and see actually the small companies grow from small to billion-dollar companies. So in that sense, it's a very good place and very important place for institutions to be part of that and find the places because, yeah, to be invested and even grow the allocations in this asset class as well.
I do agree. If you have money and resources and if you don't have problem with liquidity, never, ever stop investing. Don't try to time the market. This probably is one of the better opportunities we have had in quite a few years. I experienced that after the financial crisis where we did buy a lot of secondaries fund on fund level portfolios where they might have 30 different funds in a portfolio. There were sellers back then. And then they turned out to be very good investments. I also experienced that right after the and during the tech bubble when I was investing in single companies. If you do have a good companies in your portfolios, you should really try to support these people. On the other hand, you have to make some choices. If you really see that some of these companies are not going to fly, you have to let the puppy go, so to speak. But if you have the companies there which you can support, you definitely should do it. So it's a good idea to basically not stop investing when things look bad. You make the worst mistakes as an investor when the things look too good.
Right. So, Marco, as I hear from some of my LPs, it's never as bad as it seems, but it's also never as good as it seems. And you have to cut the losses, let the puppy go, as you say.
Yeah.
But if we can be tangible here, is there an example? Who do you think in this market environment, and both of you have been through multiple cycles, who will prove to be the winners? What are the characteristics that you're looking for in your investment opportunities in this time?
If I were to look at the new investments or the old ones on fund level, as our colleagues mentioned before, you have to try to find teams where they have team members or advisors who do have cross-cycle experience, which means that there should be people, advisors, maybe the managers who have seen the GFC, and maybe even the tech bubble. I know that some of the larger international LPs, when they look at these funds, they really prefer these kind of companies which do have that kind of experience, because it's a totally different ballgame to make investments in a honeymoon land. It is totally different, because once you start to manage these single companies, when things go unexpected, the team dynamics is totally different. You are not as optimistic as you used to be. You start to argue about things, about money, growth, and strategy. Then the experience, because experience is a hard teacher. She gives you the lesson first.
For me?
Yeah. Well, good, Marco, that you're speaking for, that we will still have at work in the coming decades also. But I would say, I like what Joe said earlier about this expecting capital growth or getting returns. Mm. And I mean, like in the longer terms, investing is all about dividends, rents, and coupons. And that's what we live on it. And if you wait for too long and the manager doesn't return any capital, and then as you said, the honeymoon land is over and the manager missed the opportunity and maybe has to raise a new fund. So it's really difficult situation. And in that sense, it helps to see that, not to wait for the last euro or dollar on the table, but also taking that like in a long-term view and also getting returns to the investors.
Yes, the DPIs, they are important in a sense. You might find that you have been an investor in one GP, and you're investing in their fourth fund. So they might have four different vintages. Then the oldest one is over 7, maybe 8 years. And you could find that the DPI is extremely low. And it really means that if they have not returned any money, it's quite likely that the final results are going to be relatively disappointing. I would say so.
Yeah, we're talking about good vintages here that we'll be looking out for. And actually, I was tuning into Mubadala earlier. And one of the things that was commented on was the fact that we're actually, while this market correction is happening with rising interest rates, we're also experiencing a huge platform shift into AI. So I will be the first panel that mentions ChatGPT. You've heard it many time again. But how are both of you thinking about, you know, this huge platform shift and the reality that, hey, even as the market pulls back, this vintage, these next few years with the explosion of AI could be transformational?
Absolutely. And if you happen to own NVIDIA shares, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what it will shift is that, of course, the capital is needed less to even smaller companies to grow their business. In that sense, it's even more difficult for capital to find that right companies. I think there will be a lot of disappointments as well. And in that sense, that I would say obvious is that the smaller funds can make huge returns. And also, it requires a lot of work for the managers to find the best companies.
Well, so interesting. So despite both of you saying experience being one of the key drivers, of course, get advisors, but small funds and emerging managers are not off the table for both of you.
Absolutely not, because we have invested in those type of situations. And we've seen that some of these rising stars or emerging managers or hidden gems, they turn out to be real good ones. Not all, but some of them. You try to focus on the team because you don't know anything more about these people than who they are and what type of people they are, because there is absolutely no track record. They might have a background as entrepreneurs or something like that, which doesn't mean that they are going to be good investors investing other people's money. But you have also supported these kind of companies in Finland, and some of these GPs are one of the best you can find internationally, which with huge returns. Not all, but some.
Yeah, just to continue that, of course, how can I as an investor benefit for the now the AI movement? But also, I guess then you can, or what is the like a longer term impact? Will it create growth for benefit of GDP growth? But or at least are we all unemployed in like in 20 years? But I would say I would be more optimistic on that. So it will great, at least in a short term, productivity growth boost and also, growth.
So we have a question in the audience, and this is the time. Yep. All right. I'll just repeat that for the audience. What are the best soft skills and hard skills that you are looking for in GPs in this environment?
I would say when it comes to soft skills, they are the same regardless of the market. You have to treat these people fairly when it goes up or if it goes down. Don't alter your behavior towards the founders and the people around you, if it's going up or down. You have to try to be the same. Treat them as people. The hard skills probably would be that it's very beneficial if you have seen what happens in reality and company level when things go south. What are the real consequences? What happens there? Because they have to start to concentrate on different things. It's same with the more mature companies as well, when you have to do restructuring.
Yeah, Tommy? I agree with how the manager reacts to the new situation. And as Joe said, that taking the, not concentrating on their own work, but also taking the input.
Being coachable.
Yeah, being coachable. I would say my work, I feel that the institutions are not perfect. I mean, there are human decision makers there as well. And when things go south, also these institutions have to think about their processes. And if I bring two managers, that it's an established one and safe bet, and then we have an emerging market would be like better. But it's a big job to convince that, hey, maybe this is the now to this would be better. But because everything looks uncertain, we go with the established one with the great track record. But we never know if that's good work for the 10 years.
All right. Well, fire round. Key takeaway for the audience, and we have some GPs that sneaked in. So maybe for the LPs and GPs in the room, what's your key takeaway from this?
Keep on investing.
Be patient.
Be patient. All right. Be patient, but be certain that you need to let the puppies go when they are not doing well. Never time the market and look out for those hard and soft skills to develop and adapt in this difficult environment. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Private Equity Allocation.
And thanks so much for tuning in this week. For more inspiring conversations just like this to help you lead, build, and invest better, follow us wherever you get your podcasts and on socials on Billion Dollar Moves Podcast and Sarah Chen Global. And yes, if you want to keep hearing from us, pledge your support for the show by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, a 5-star rating on Spotify, and telling a friend. I'd really appreciate it. I'm Sarah Chen Spallings, and you've been listening to Billion Dollar Moves.